Okay, as our final presentation for the meeting. You know, there have been some issues, as we discussed earlier, that, you know, some of the environmental efforts, some of the sustainability efforts have been pushing for reduced carbon footprints, a lot of different environmental issues, which among them have been the question of peat-free, peat harvesting, peat feed products, which does, of course, affect our industry for those of you who use peat in your soil products, etc. And the Paul Short is the executive director of the Canadian Sphagnum Peat Moss Association, if you don't already know him. And they have done an outstanding job of dealing with these environmental issues. And Paul's here to help us understand what the issues are, how to respond to them, when you get approached by your customers on the peat-free issue. Paul?
Thank you. Good morning. I do appreciate the chance to come down. I left Edmonton yesterday morning. It was minus 10, inch and a half of snow, and they had to de-ice the aircraft. So it was real nice to be in a warm, hospitable group. Batting cleanup. So I'm not going to say anything about Texas Rangers. But the peat industry, the peatland issues, I've got some information here that talks about,
point it over there.
Okay.
Not working?
Not yet.
Is it off or on?
There's a button on the left.
All right. Ah, yeah. There we go. Oh, good. What I wanted to do is talk about, is that a little loud?
No.
Okay. Give you an overview of the Canadian peatland resources, why we feel, why peat is important, why restoration in terms of the issues that we deal with in restoration is important, peatland restoration research, what is the foundation for the science behind why we're making the claims we do, some results of the restoration. To begin, though, I want to talk about peatlands, and I want to make sure that we are all on the same page regarding this resource asset. In Canada, we have five categories of wetlands, and of these are the two that are the ones that are what we call peatlands. The term peatlands is not used in the natural resource management aspects whatsoever, but peatlands, in our terms, are what we're trying to challenge the international as well as the national governments to understand that peatlands are really bogs and fens, two issues. And bogs are characterized by dense layers of peat, acidic, low nutrient content, water table at or near the surface, usually covered with mosses, shrubs, and sedges, trees possibly present. Basically it's a bowl, okay? And you've got all of these things in that bowl. The moisture content is usually within the bowl, so there's no new nutrients coming through, there's no water volumes coming through. The fens are characterized, they're covered with peat, water table at or near the surface, higher nutrient content than bogs, mainly because of the flow of any moisture or water coming through in terms of bringing nutrients through it. Vegetation usually characterized by sedges and grasses, trees and shrubs may not be present. So this is the context of what we're looking at, peatlands, bogs, and fens. How much do we have? Canada is the largest land base, resource base. Peatlands represent 90% of the wetlands and cover around 423 million acres. To give you a perspective of how much that is, if you took the four states in the US, Washington, Oregon, California, and New Mexico, and the better part of Nevada, that's the land base equivalent that we've got in Canada called peatlands, those bogs and fens. You want to know how much we've actually been using in the 70 years that the industry's been in place? This is Portland, this little red dot here. That's the equivalent landmass that we've disturbed for peat harvesting, compared to the landmass I just outlined in terms of what we have as it's called peatlands. So this is this is an important part of the discussion in the sense that this is a natural resource asset. So you're going to hear some information about how much does that produce? What is the natural productivity of that massive land? But before I get into that, I want to use a comparison. This peat-free issue around the UK, and do a comparison between Canada and the UK, just so that you understand some of the issues that emerged out of the UK. Percentage of world's peatlands. We have 25% of it, so a quarter of the world's peatlands. And a quarter of 1% is what was in the UK. They had 1 million hectares, and we have 171 million hectares. What remains untouched is 138 million hectares. Pretty much take the western side of the US, and we're not touching that in terms of peatland activities. What remains in the UK is several thousand hectares. They've been at it for about 300 years. And much of the issue that is, in my view, I'm on the International Peat Society organization as well. Much of the issue is hitting the peat industry because we are the easiest targets. That's my sense of it. You cannot take on the moor and the sheep farmers and the agricultural community in England. They are much more impacting upon the peatlands in the UK than the peat industry. Interestingly enough, the UK, and I think perhaps some of you are more versed in this than I, but they had a 2010 peat-free legislation. They legislated this back in 2008. By legislation, they were to be peat-free. Well, they are not. In fact, the information I have received is that the commercial users have reduced to about 26 to 27% use of peat, if not eliminated. But the retail, the hobby farmers, the family groups have increased close to 86%. So, and it hasn't stopped the importation of product into the UK from offshore. So basically, they've moved the issue offshore. They have not stopped the young folks that are hobby farming and hobby horticulturists. They haven't stopped them from doing it. And the information I'm getting is that they're not going to be able to do it. They re-established a new piece of legislation, 2010, to attempt to come to some reconciliation to bring it back down. Again, still with this peat-free issue. But you can see what's driving it. They don't have a lot of resource left. They had a lot of resource, or minimal amount of resource to begin with, relative to Canada. So when somebody says, well, why don't you take the path that Britain's taking? The left-hand side, I help, and what I've showed you so far has helped to explain that, I trust.
Question. I noticed you had 423 million acres.
That's right.
In the past 10 years, a lot of times we've used 270 million acres.
Right.
When was that? Do you know when that was updated? Or
I asked for clarity on this very point because we've been using that same number.
Yes.
And the number that came in was from Lynn Rochford, who you'll see in a moment is the industrial chair head in Canada and for peatland management. And that came from a number that was one of her colleague professors had recently done some research work and had actually confirmed this number. So I was surprised at this. I mean, I came in, the numbers that we were using prior to this, you're absolutely dead right, Steve, was that number. So I asked for credentials. I have the information here. It comes from a credible source. So it's significantly increased, and I was surprised when that came in too. So what happened? Where did all that other stuff go? Well, I don't have an explanation for that. All I can tell you is that this is an incredible source. We are using it now. The research community is using it. So it's going forward on that basis.
Well, the industry in general, like us, yeah, we need to get that background because we might be able to get challenged.
That's right. And that's why I will provide the kind of credential, the information. So it came from Lynn Rochford. And you'll see Dr. Rochford in a minute. I'll use a background to it. And I don't mind. Any time you have a question about any of the presentation, stop and we'll talk about it. I mean, that's perhaps the easiest. Again, it's going to a natural resource asset. That landscape, that peatland, is producing over 70 million tons. This is the natural productivity of that peatland. And then I'm trying to make it into the context of a resource asset. So we have 70 million tons of peat accumulates each year in Canada. And 1.3 million tons of peat is harvested each year. So you can see that we are not anywhere near the actual productivity levels that are coming from the natural peatlands that we have in Canada. And that 1.3 million changes, of course, those of you who are in the industry, changes basically depending on the harvest season. A good season, you'll probably get close to this number. Not so good season, obviously, will be lower. And that's 70 million tons of peat accumulation each year. It's changing too, and we'll get into some of that in terms of the climate change. We're seeing the permafrost line in Canada runs across the boreal, and it's moving north as the climate warms up. So as it's moving north, we're seeing an increase in the actual growth or the increase in the accumulation of peat. And this is an important also issue that you're going to be talking, when somebody starts talking to you about climate change issues, and we'll get into that in a bit. This is another issue of, as it moves north, yes, there's opportunities and there's losses, and it's going to be tougher in the southern portions of where the existing range of peatlands are. It'll be a lot more conducive to growth of peatlands, especially the sphagnum, as it moves north. There's a lot of science being done on this right now. We certainly provide the detail when you need it. That's the context of the peatland resource. One of the key issues that has been driving is this question of climate change. We had a report produced, and these reports I can get you if you just simply dial in give me an email and we'll send it out to you. This report was compiled by a Dr. Strack out of Calgary, and basically we want to know where are we with the industry. It's called Peatland Disturbance and Climate Change. What is the role of Canada's horticultural peat industry? So this is quite new. And to set the context, global peatland storage estimated between 455 gigatons of carbon, and Canada peatland stored an estimated 147 gigatons of carbon. Bob's going to send a questionnaire around after all of this is all finished, and he's going to ask you how many. Not really. I'm just putting this up. These are relative numbers, ladies and gentlemen. I can't, the gigatons, megatons, tetratons. They're big numbers. And it's the relative numbers that I want to show here, where we sit within this. So that's the stable state of the state of the world issues around accumulation of carbon in peatlands and Canada's storage. It does not address the issues of fire or permafrost change, two of the key drivers that are coming in on the climate issue. But on the peatlands, I want to talk about this wildfire versus harvesting. One of the issues that have not, and again to the natural resources, we have not looked at peatlands in its natural ecosystem state. What are the natural disturbances? What's the true ecology of peatlands in total? We haven't really begun to follow that kind of issues. Wildfire is one of the biggest change agents in peatlands in Canada, or anywhere in the world. And this is not man-caused fires. These are wildfires. These are not the type of fires that you're going to see big promotional material coming out of Indonesia. Those fires, in many cases, are human set. And much of the focus on climate change issues around peatlands generated out of the Jakarta conference about 2 years ago, when a major issue came up about everybody choking to death down in Kuala Lumpur because of the peat burning that was going on. That created a real focal point for the debate on peat and its issues. So peat lands burn, and they sometimes burn horrifically. Direct and indirect effects of fire amounts to a source to the atmosphere totaling 23.1 million tons of CO2 a year, and this is a carbon equivalent of 6.3 million tons, and this is just Western Canada, okay? We haven't got the statistical information for the balance of Canada. So this is only two-thirds of the resource. It is estimated that decomposition from all harvested peatlands in Canada is 0.26 megatons per year. So 23.1 comes from fires, and we have 0.26 megatons. Again, relative numbers. That's all I'm just trying to give you the kind of picture here of what's happening. This is our emissions from our industry. And all that is in this report that I indicated. Entire emissions from the peatland horticulture. The study revealed there was a study done on the greenhouse gas, but the entire life cycle of peat extraction emitted 0.54 megatons of carbon in 99, and could be rising to 0.89 depending upon the development. It also showed, so that of that activity, 71% of the emissions associated with peat decomposition, 15% from land use change, 10% from transportation to market, and 4% from processing. This is the study, Cleary et al. That's a study you'll see in many, many places when you talk about Canada and you talk about carbon emission issues. We have been doing restoration, so this is I've given you the sort of the global picture, what are nationally what's happening, what's coming out of our emission operations from our, now this is what's happening when we start restoration activities. There are limited studies in Canada on emission studies for restoration. Europeans have been doing a bit more of it. The Europeans estimated annual sinks of 113.67 grams of CO2 per square meter per year. That's the equivalent. If applied to the current restoration in Canada, this would amount to about 2,000 tons of CO2 per cubic meter or per square meter of current sequestration a year, with an additional uptake of 4,000, depending upon the activity. So this is just that's the key message here is when we restore, the peatlands start a form of accumulation for carbon. They're sequestering carbon. And this is really the takeaway points that I would hope you, of all the numbers that you have. Canadian peat horticultural emissions, all sources, were 0.89 megatons, representing 0.03% of all degraded peatlands in the world. Pretty darn small number. So when somebody starts talking about your peat is a huge emitter of carbon and a major contribution to the greenhouse gases in the world, there's a number that you can bring up. And that's just on the degraded peatlands, only on the peatlands. The next one, emissions are 0.006% of all total global net anthropogenic emissions, man-caused emissions. So we are even smaller when it comes to what it is that our industry, and that's the greenhouse gases, global emissions, are causing. And in Canada, with a national total of greenhouse gases of 771 megatons, the peat industry represents only 0.1% of the total greenhouse gases. The takeaway, gentlemen and ladies, is that we are not big emitters on a world scale or on a national scale. Going into what we actually are using these peatlands for in Canada, 81% are in virgin peatlands, 15% are agriculture, and most of that agriculture occurred during the settlement in the Western Prairies, so we actually started removing some of the wetland and peatland complexes as they especially moved north into the sort of border fringe. There's 0.8 urban development, 0.8 reservoirs, 0.7 miscellaneous, ports are 0.3, forestry is 0.02, our industry, peat moss production, horticulture, 0.016% of the total landmass that you've got. So, huge resource, carbon questions, carbon emission issues, address those. We are a very small percentage of the users. And I think it's important to talk about we're a horticultural peat, not fuel peat. And because this has come up quite considerable times, and I've talked to a few people, you're burning this. No, we're not. This is horticultural peat. I think this is a slide that is an underpinning to some of the, peat is an underpinning of a multi-billion dollar horticultural industry. This is where I think there's an opportunity. I don't know whether many of you have seen this growing media in the EU, publication 2007. We don't have a comparable one here between Canada and the US. And I think, Bob, this may be an area where MSC and CSPMA can look at doing some homework on this. And the reason I bring this up is to show the value and significance of it. There's a chart in here that basically says peat versus non-peat constituents for the production of professional growing mix. 86% of the medium is peat-based in Europe. 86%. So if it's a, when I use the word underpinning, that's an understatement. It's a multi-billion dollar industry in the US. And the peat, I believe, the numbers may not be identical, 86. This is a proxy that I'm looking at here in North America. But it is huge. And they have other breakdowns too. So there's something that perhaps we can begin to look at. So Canada is the largest producer of horticultural peat in the world. It supplies 98% of the sphagnum peat to the US. Quite often you're getting confused. People are confusing things like tropical peat coming in. It's not coming into the US. If you're getting supplied 98% of peat from Canada. So clearly it's in our vested interest to be a part of the concerns and expressions of interest from the Mulch and Soil Council and many of the other growers that are involved in this thing. So we you saw what we do when we're harvesting, why restoration is important. Our goal is to return harvested peatlands to functioning ecosystems. Peatland functions are water storage and filtration, flora and fauna diversity, biodiversity, carbon storage, and historic archives. During harvesting, we're able to maintain water storage and filtration functions. After harvest, we're able to restore carbon sequestration and biodiversity functions in the 5 to 10 years after harvesting period. This is based on science, and we'll get into that in a minute and see some of the information. An unable to return historic archive function, therefore important to conserve representative bogs that are unique to a region. Restoration, peatland restoration in Canada. This is the end of life view of a bog that finished harvesting. It's not a pretty sight. NASA might have wanted to use this at one time. The restoration process began in 1992. Restoration workshops were started. Greenhouse experiments in 92, field experiments in 97, went to full-scale restoration in 99, and 350-hectare industry restoration in 2000. And I think part of the pressure for this back in 92 was peat-free, and the issues were coming in from Europe, getting out of the peat industry. So we knew that the pressure points were coming in on our environmental challenges around our management practices for peat harvesting. In 2003, we established a five-year term for a chair in peatland management. This is Dr. Lynn Rochford from the University of Laval. She was appointed the chair, she still is. In 2008, we had a second five-year term of the industry research chair begun. There are 19 Canadian peat producers that are our partners. So when people ask, well, what research are you doing? We've been at it since 92 with dialogue work. We've been at with since 2003. With this major research program at the University of Laval. Our monies that we put into it are close to $6 million jointly between ourselves and the federal government, and it'll extend for another 2 more years. This is the research chair program. It's ecological restoration research, sphagnum farming, other reclamation options, and fen restoration. The webpage on the bottom here, certainly when you have a chance to look at this, a little later on. Ecological restoration long-term objectives to restore functional peatland accumulating ecosystem. So this is kind of the kind of thing that they're anticipating doing. We came up after, I believe, 2004, used by Canadian and European peat producers, a peatland restoration guide. It's available free of charge. Simply download it from our website. This has basically become how-to manual to restore bogs. We'll go over a Waterbell case. This is what it looked like in 1999. It's a bit of that moonscape post-harvest. This site actually had not been actively harvested for 25 years, so there had been no restoration practices applied to this whatsoever. In 2000, the end of 99 and beginning of 2000, the same site. They began, these are man-made ponds that came into it. They applied, and I'll go into it real quickly. They took a donor bog site at about a 1 to 10 scale, being 1 meter of live bog for 10 meters of bog that was being restored. They spread it with a fertilizer spreader, covered with mulch, straw mulch. And then in the spring, blocked up the ditches that had been used to drain and bog down during the harvesting operation. Water table came back up. They did the additional ditch activity. In 2002, this was the result that they began to see. So in the space of 2 years, they had reestablished the vegetative cover, mostly sphagnum moss. They began to find that ponds were being actively used by a whole mix of species, bog species. 2004, the pitcher plant, the leopard frog, the diversity. This is a very interesting, this is how much sphagnum has been reintroduced on that same site that you saw in 99, which looked like a moonscape.
And how much is that? How deep is that?
How deep is that? That's about 10 inches, 10, 12 inches.
In four years.
So, impact on peat industry. Before harvesting, we look at stakeholder input, minimize impact, discussions, and hydrology. During harvesting, buffer zones are established, and we leave a layer of peat at the bottom. This is in that manual. After harvesting, we restore or reclaim. And we, when I said all that land base is in Canada, most of it's in the hands of the Crown. And so we lease it from the Crown. There are private lands, but they're most of it leased by the Crown. And the Crown finally makes the final decision on who actually, what that end result is going to be from either restoring it or reclaiming it. And depending upon the Crown's needs, they may restore it to forest or reclaim it back to forest, or they may return it to grasslands. Our objective as an industry is to, by policy and practice, to have restored wetlands, ecosystem functions wetlands. We've been working at this. Thousands of hectares are being restored. In 2006, there were 1,800 hectares in process of being restored and reclaimed. We intend from 2007 to 2011, the peat companies to restore and reclaim more than 3,100 hectares. This is a chart that we've been using. We're going to have to update it a bit. I think the total numbers of acreage has changed slightly. It's increased. It's probably about 3,000 or 4,000 more. But you can see what we're moving towards in terms of currently being harvested. Harvested has ceased, process of restoration, and where we want to go in the future. I mentioned that management of the landscape, the resources, we're pushing on that agenda. Please don't mistake it, that we are highly regulated. Our industry is as regulated as any other natural resource in Canada. So we're highly regulated. Part of the regulation and restoration requirements in the province of New Brunswick, for instance, where we have 40% of Canada's peat production, they require a deposit of $750 per acre. So what does it cost to get that back to that bog? It's about $1,000 or $1,100 per hectare to do. So the companies put in a $750 bond that at the end will be used to help restore that bog. Other provinces are considering similar policies. In fact, this morning, there's meetings in Alberta with the minister to talk about regulation changes to meet what's going to happen. And this is happening across all of Canada right now. So we're slowly getting the regulations to be uniform. You can imagine some of the challenges that our companies have. One part of the country has this set, and the other part has this set. And there's a real mix and match of approaches. Up till now, I've talked about the environmental issues, and the sustainability question is both environmental, economic, and social. If you're not addressing those three component parts, you have a hard time reclaiming sustainability. I talked about we can renew and restore these bogs back to the functioning ecosystems. In fact, this summer was the 10th year of that bog, and there's some new research coming in. We want to see where we are in that continuum, especially on the greenhouse gas issues. So, but the important part is to also look at the socioeconomic. So what is it contributing to the well-being of both nationally as well as in Canada? Our direct economic value in Canada is $446 million. I mean, we are not in the energy industry, equivalent of forestry nor agriculture. We're a small industry, but significant in the sense of where we are actually operating. Direct economic value, read it there. Wages, production, coverage of employee benefits, the dental, we pay considerable amounts, local expenditures on materials and supply. That's important to know, because quite frankly, we are a rural-based industry. The operations we have are in smaller rural-based locations around Canada, Eastern Canada in particular. Number of full-time employees, very small, 1,844. Number of full-time non-productive, 700 non-production, not productive. Yeah, that's it. I have to watch myself. They're all productive. It's all in non-production. Total number of employees is 2628. Seasonal employees, and this is 1329. This is very important in some of the rural areas, especially the farming community, or the ranching community, or the forestry community. These folks get a lot of opportunities with our industry. And the number of employees covered by collective bargaining is 1301. So it's important to these are intergenerational jobs. Some of these industry companies of ours have been in the place for about 30, 35, 40 years. They're third generation, fourth generation in some cases. So you're seeing a lot of the folks that are from year to year, from generation to generation, a part of the same industry. And it's an important part of the fabric. They're well paid. They're well cared for, they have benefits. So this is an important part of what we want to have as a part of our messaging in terms of our sustainability accounts. What is sustainability? The Convention of Biological Diversity states that sustainable use means the use of components of biological diversity in a way and at a rate that does not lead to the long-term decline of biological diversity, thereby maintaining its potential to meet needs and aspirations of present and future generations. We feel that we live up to this kind of standard. Yes, we're place-based. We are in place for up to 30, 35 years. We take some of this biodiversity. It's an economic use. We do return it, though, in terms of our management practices that I've just described to you. And it's for the future needs. They'll be there. It'll be sequestering carbon. I think it's important, our position in terms of the restoration, we cannot replace. When I talked about that bowl, that bog, those bogs, Eastern Canada, 8 to 10,000 years to come to that full log. Western Canada's a little younger, 68,000 years. We cannot return the biomass in any living human being's lifetime. We can return the living ecosystem and the functions of that peatland. That's the objective. That's what we're dealing with. That's the measurement against which we should be challenged and charged with. But to replace an entire bog with all its biomass, it's no different than to say to a forester, replace that tree instantly. Because the biomass in northern Canada, the boreal landscape up in northern Canada, the white spruce, it's 110 to 120 years to get to maturity. There's no living human being, no baby born today that's going to see that tree planted today in its maturity. But we count on it being there, and it's still a renewable resource in terms of the definition of forestry. Sustainability, in our view, is not measured on environmental stewardship alone. Stewardship is the balance of sustainable environmental management, sustainable economic well-being, and sustainable social outcomes. I've tried to take some time now to talk about all of those things. What are we doing in addition to what I've just described? The strategy, we are supporting the development of a strategy for responsible peatland management. This has just been approved at the international level in Amsterdam a month ago. That document will be coming out, and we'll be distributing it and asking countries and companies and mainly the governments to tell us what you're doing about meeting these objectives. We're doing life cycle assessment studies. We're just finishing the LCA for environment. We're looking at doing a social LCA as well to tell us where the key hotspot areas are, what's our challenges. We've done industry sustainability benchmarking and reporting. Was the generation of the statistical information on how much money and how many jobs and so on. And this last one, certification, peatland harvesting. I'm sure most of you know, Verifora, SCS, Scientific Certification System, within probably a month to 2 months, we will have a certification system under their SCS program. So our peatlands will be able to be certified. Peatland management practices by companies will be able to go through this auditing practice through SCS under the Mirafiori Annex and be certified as being responsibly managed peatlands. We think that's rather significant. We're getting a lot of interest from Europeans as to how you did this, the cost, the timing. There will be a major announcement, I was talking briefly, there will be a major announcement of, and coming out of this initiative in December. And we'll, in Monterey, California, I think it's called the Sustainability Summit, it's being put on. There's a large international symposium on responsible peatland management coming to Quebec City next year, 13th to 17th. There's the goals, peatlands, certainly a better part of the time of the year to be up there than now, but put it on your calendar. We'd be more than pleased to see you up there. Thank you very much. I'll be pleased to have answer any questions.
I've heard that the meat industry in Canada is somewhat depressed right now due to economic conditions. Can you kind of elaborate a little bit on what the status of the industry is?
The short answer is not depressed.
It's not.
Okay. No. I haven't got any written literature to it, or this is mostly anecdotal. Our people, when the recessions hit, we're often able to write them out a lot better. This is what I'm getting back from my CEOs, the executives. The reason for that is that people will put off the major expenditures, but they love to beautify their backyard. So they, instead of taking the $2,500 vacation, they'll put $2,250 in the backyard and use the peat products and so on. So our information is that we're riding out. What you may be hearing is that we have a good harvest this year and it's pretty competitive out there for prices.
Okay.
That's a difference than wrong. Yeah, that's a difference than we're in recession and we're having a hard time.
Just because there's a lot of production because it's dry.
It was a high production year, especially in the east. And the consequent of supply and demand, and that's what I think you're hearing, as opposed to, we're depressed because of that, but some of them are.
Well, I know all your bogs are slightly different, but when you're starting a new bog and then you harvest them down, and then you stop harvesting, how far down do you normally harvest? And before you turn around and start exploring?
Our practice is a meter. So we'll leave a meter. That's by policy. A meter of peat in the bottom of the bog. Because that's the best way to describe it. And it really depends upon the topography, the underlying basin, and so on. There's some changes being pushed now by regulation in New Brunswick to take it right to the bottom, to the mineralized part of the bog.
You want me to?
Yeah, please.
Depending on where you are in Canada, like the bog in Manitoba will be shallower than in New Brunswick. In New Brunswick, you can have a bog that will be deep as 40 feet. And which is probably the deepest one, but 30 feet is common. While in Alberta and Manitoba, you'll have like 15 feet long. Yeah.
That reflects the age difference. I mean, the bogs in Western Canada are younger than the bogs in Eastern Canada. So our objective by the policy is that we leave that as a sort of a starter material. And the deeper down you go, the quality of the peat does decrease too, so that you're not always getting your best horticultural quality peat from the bottom of your bogs. And so that's why you're getting blending in.
Thanks very much. Thank you, Paul.